Hello, guys. Welcome back to the Broly Talks Hockey Podcast. And today I'm joined by Dennis Bernstein, senior writer at the Fourth Period. And today we're going to talk about the Kings' offseason, what to look forward to next season, and a little bit about how reporting's changed. Just to get right into it, how are you doing today, Dennis?
I'm doing great. Happy to talk hockey in August with you, Brody. So happy to do that. And things are really good here in Los Angeles.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great. Hockey starting back up soon. We have the World Juniors this week. Football starts again soon. Great way to kick into the fall and winter months. I know nobody wants to talk about it, but going back to the start of the offseason, the Kings had a great start. They acquired Kevin Fiala from the Minnesota Wild. Honestly, just a little bit of a surprising trade. It kind of just heated up at the last minute and then boom, it just happened. So how big of an impact is this for the Kings on and off the ice?
Well, it should be a big impact, Brody, because this is what they really needed. I've been asking for like 2 years to get an impact player like Kevin Fiala. And it's not just the goals. And granted, he scored, I think, 33 last year. It's the assists. They needed a playmaker up front. Except for Kopitar, they don't really have great passers. And if you look at Fiala's assist total, and remember, he wasn't playing on the line with Kaprizov. Exactly what they needed. They needed a dynamic young player. Now they're paying them for point of game production. Don't get me wrong. That's a big ticket for that player. But the fact that they took nobody off their roster, on their NHL roster, and got a player like this who's who can be a difference maker in Los Angeles for a team that wasn't great offensively, I think it was a great move by Rob Blake. But that's why you play the games. We'll see what happens. But I think certainly today they are stronger offensively than they were last season.
All right. And where do you see Fiala slotting in? Because it seemed like the Kings kind of had a good setup there. Their top six seemed like it was set in stone. But now with Fiala coming in, how does this change things for the Kings?
Yeah, they had a hole next to Kopitar, right? Because Dustin Brown retired. Anthony C. is a free agent now. He's in Chicago. They didn't really have the player to play with Campion with Kopitar. And that's where he slots in. I assume they're going to keep their second line together with respect to Arvidsson, Deneau and Trevor Moore. But the one thing about Arvidsson is that he did have back surgery in May, and we'll see if he's going to be ready for opening night, because a herniated disc is nothing to joke about. But yeah, right. He's going to play up top. And like I said, he's a playmaker. He's as much a distributor as his goal scorer, which will certainly help Kempe, because for all the great things that Kempe did last year, and I've been a big critic of him, 35 goals is a lot of goals for that player. But he is a passer. So if you think that Kopitar is on the decline, I personally don't. I think Kopitar will certainly benefit from it as well. I think Fiala has the ability to set up a guy like Kempe. So he has a really good chance of replicating that 35-goal score season last season with Fiala on his line.
This inevitably leads to Eofalo going down to the third line. Could you see maybe a little bit of disgruntlement in wanting to get out of LA, or do you think he's perfectly okay with that?
No, he just wants to win. And he's right. Getting paid. He's not on the contract here, so he wants to win. Look, and that's the key. Arvidsson's the key. If Arvidsson's not ready for opening night, you're going to have Eofalo move up to the second line. Mm-hmm. He can't be disgruntled. You got to be a team player, because I think if we're honest, Alex Eofalo is probably a third-line player on a championship team, like a Tampa, like a Colorado. He's not a top-six player. Now, granted, he could have a bounce-back season and be that top-six player, and maybe he slots in instead of Trevor Moore. But at this point, you got to be a team player, and they haven't won for a long time in Los Angeles. So I think Alex, knowing Alex the way I do, he's just going to say, hey, where am I going to play? Point me in the right direction. And he's the opportunity, if he is going to be on the third line, to play with Quentin Byfield, who certainly needs to emerge this season. So I think a veteran like that can only help QB coming into the season, if that's where he ultimately.
Talking about young players who are emerging, Sean Durzi had a great year last year and kind of came out of nowhere. And he's not currently under contract. He is an RFA. How soon until we see extensions of him and Mikey Anderson?
I would assume that you'd have extensions before training camp started next month. That's about a month away, because you don't want that player not coming in on an entry-level deal, off an entry-level deal, not playing camp. I mean, it should be relatively easy, but August is a downtime for agents, for players, for management. So although I see people on Twitter begging for Anderson and Durzi extensions right now, it's August 10th. There's nothing to worry about. If this is September 10th and they open training camp in a week and they're still not signed, then I'd be concerned, but I'm not concerned. I think those two players will come in under contract with the remaining cap space that they have. And so Kings fans shouldn't worry about either Durzi or Anderson not being a holdout. And it wouldn't be a holdout because they don't have contracts, but not being signed before training camp starts.
Talking about other defensemen on the roster, they lost Troy Stetcher and Ali Mata. How big of a hit is that, not only on the ice, but in the locker room?
Well, remember, Troy Stetcher was picked up at the deadline primarily because Drew Doughty was injured. So I don't think they'll miss Troy. Good guy, scored in the playoffs against Edmonton, but that's certainly an affordable loss, so they couldn't do that. Ali Mata wasn't good in the first half, was better in the second half. Now remember, they're bringing back Edler. They're moving Sean Walker to the left side. And game seven, Toby Bjornfoot was a scratch. So they should have enough on the left side. You have to assume Bjornfoot's going to progress at some point. The key to the whole thing is Sean Walker moving from the right side to the left side, coming off an ACL tear. That's going to be the major question mark with respect to the left. Because, look, they could have traded for Chychrun, and maybe they still do. They could have traded for a Provorov. They chose not to. They chose, and Rob Blake said it in his one of his media availabilities after the season was over. They're going to move him over to the left side, Sean Walker. He's played there before. But, you know, it's a big ask for Sean Walker. So he's got to step up and give them top 4 minutes, hopefully some offense. So I think the losses of Mata and Stetcher, if they're going to be a 100-point team again, they should be able to overcome the departure of those two players.
Going back to Anderson and Durzi, with only $4 million left of cap space, could we see any sort of cap move to clear space for both of them or anything like that of that sort?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that you get a small raise from Sean Durzi, maybe, I don't know, $1.2 million. And I think with respect to Mike Anderson, maybe a two-year deal for, what, $2 million per? That would be $3.2 million. That would give them but they'd be up against the cap. So the next move that they make, there'd have to be some cap clearing. At this point, I don't see any cap clearing necessary, or at least a player of consequence that they would have to move to sign both these players.
Going into next season, who are a couple players on the Kings that you think are poised for a breakout?
Well, I would hope that Arthur Kaliev has a first half better than the second half. Because Artie, you know, maybe it's a long season, it's the first NHL season. I think he had 3 goals in his last 35 games. In the second half. So that wasn't a good ending. And he wound up being a scratch late in the series. You'd want, and look, not for nothing, he scored, I think, double digit goals on the fourth line, basically. So I'd like to see, can this guy become the next, 25 to 30 goal scorer? Because eventually Victor Arvidsson's going to hit free agency, and that would be the player on the right side that you would want to stick in. So, but again, if you're going to move him up to the third line, you want to see that productivity. So that's number one. Number two, I think a lot of this leverage is on what kind of player Quentin Byfield is this season. Like, you know what you're going to get from Kopitar. I assume he's going to lead the team again in scoring. You know what you're going to get from Phil Deneau, although I don't think Phil's going to get 27 goals, but if he gets 20, 22, 23, like, Quentin can't score 5 goals this year. It's as simple as that. He can't be a scratch in the playoffs. He has to emerge. He's the second overall pick. And now, although people don't like to hear it in Los Angeles, you look at a Tim Stützle and he's scoring, in the mid-20s in goals. Like, Quentin has to break through this season and be an impact player. I'm not saying he should lead the league in scoring. I'm not saying he's going to be Connor McDavid this year, but he's got to make a difference. If he's a difference maker on that third line, and that's the thing, Brody, like, championship teams don't have top sixes. They have top nines, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what the question mark with the Kings is. Can they get that third line to be productive? Because the fourth line with Lemieux, with Blake Lizotte, I think that's going to be fine. It's that third line. If you assume that Kevin Fiala is going to improve the first line, if you assume the second line, that was the second line last year, who was really the first line in the second half of the year, is going to produce at that level, your third line has to be a more productive third line. Because remember, you had Brown in there, you had Anthony Seale, who was hurt. It's a lot of mixing and matching that just frankly didn't work. Mm-hmm. So the two players that I'd want to see emerge would be, at least from a forward standpoint, would be Byfield and Kaliev. And I'd like to see Toby Bjornfoot, because remember, Toby was a first-round pick. He has to give significant minutes. He needs to play 15 to 17 minutes, and he's never going to be a big-time scorer, but he should be in the mix on the left side as well.
Talking more about that defense, we were talking about Sean Walker. He said, Rob Blake said he's going to the left side. Mm-hmm. So that leaves 4 NHL-ready right-handed defensemen in Doughty, Durzi, Roy, and Spence. Spence has kind of, like, is he going to be that seventh defenseman or Ontario's top pair guy? Or could you see him rotating in with some injuries?
Yeah, he would rotate because remember, nobody had Jordan Spence. Oh, to be frank, Sean Dursey in the lineup last season. But when Sean Walker tears his ACL the second game in, then you have to make some accommodations and you need players to step up, and they stepped up big time. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. You could send Bjorn for down because he's waiver exempt. With same thing with Jordan Spence. I would think that Jordan, even though he acquitted himself well, he played in 24 games, 8 points, zero plus minus. He was fine. And that's the one thing about this organization. Well, they don't bring stars forward. None of the players that came in the lineup from Ontario looked out of place, looked panicked. They didn't make the big mistake in the big spot that cost them a game in the regular season or the playoffs. So Jordan Spence can certainly go down, be on the top pair in Ontario. And if somebody underperforms or is traded or gets injured, I think he would be the first call. But I think what you're probably looking at right now is Anderson and Dowdy on the top pair, Walker and Roy on the second pair, and Edler and Sean Dursey on the third pair. I think that's how you would see opening night. Maybe Bianco gets in there on the left side, but probably not. He's probably your seventh defenseman. So then you would have Jordan Spence in the minors, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, nobody really thought that he would emerge the way he did. He's 21 years old, so there's plenty of time for this player to get significant minutes. And that's the thing. Yeah, you'd want him maybe as an extra defenseman to practice with the NHL team, but a kid like that at 21 years old has got to play. And he's going to get more time playing in the AHL with Ontario than he would the NHL, given the depth chart I just gave you.
A guy like Alex Edler, was it a bit of a surprise, maybe not for like in LA, that he got re-upped, or was he just a great fit there and the organization loved his leadership?
Yeah, well, he was great before he broke his leg. He was fantastic. Man, look at his numbers. Like for half a season, he played 41 games. He had 3 goals, 16 assists, 19 points. A 40-point defenseman over 82 games. He wasn't the same player coming back from that injury. And granted, he's 35 years old. Maybe they rushed him a bit. But he loves being here. His family loves being here. And they got him, they got him cheap. They weren't going to pay him $3 million a year to come back. But he's a nice addition. I assume this would be his last season. But he enjoyed the experience here. He made the playoffs with the team. There's no reason not to. Now, is he going to play 82 games? No, because you can spell him for a Bjornfoot. You can spell him for... I assume Sean Walker's going to play a bit. So he doesn't have to play big minutes. If he comes in and gives you 12 to 15 minutes on the third pair, he's not going to make mistakes. He's a veteran in the room. He's well-liked. And remember, I think I know people don't love plus minus, but when that player is plus 18, like he's pretty good. So I like the move. I think as a transitional player, I don't think he'll have as big a role as he will. Let's put it this way. If he has a bigger role as he does, as he did last season, then Sean Walker didn't cut it as a left defenseman. If you got to move him up and move Sean down, which they don't want to do. And remember, when Sean went out, he's playing 18 minutes a night, so he can play top 4 minutes. So I'm not shocked that Edler came back. He liked it. They got him at the right price. So they just signed him. He'll play third pair minutes. He won't play every game, and they just move on. And hopefully he's part of the mix for a team that returns to the playoffs.
Talking about the team that went to the playoffs, Dustin Brown just retired. Could you see him brought on in a staff role or scouting or anything of that sort?
No, the last thing Dustin wants to do is probably be in management. I know him pretty well. He's got 4 kids. They're all playing travel hockey. So I think he's traveling around the States with them relaxing. So knowing the player and the person the way I do, I think he's just happy to be home. He played 18 years with his franchise. They're going to retire his jersey, raise it to the Raptors in February. He's not like Matt Green. Matt Green, who's now a scout, for the team, who's going to be going to management. Dustin made his money. He's happy to relax with his kids, want to see his kids grow up, which he never could when he was playing hockey. So I think he's just going to enjoy retirement. I would be pretty surprised if he just chose either a coaching or a front office or a staff role at this point in time in his life.
All right. And going back to the young, which young king is likely to take huge strides in their game out of Kaliev, Byfield, and Kupar? You already talked about Kaliev and Byfield. So if you just want to touch on Rasmus Kupari.
Yeah, Ras has all the tools, and maybe people have drawn a dotted line towards like a guy like Kempe. Maybe he's Kempe because Kempe didn't emerge till he was 25 years old. I like the speed. He's a smart player. I just don't think he has the skill offensively to be a 35 or a 25 goal scorer in this league. I think he's destined for a bottom six role, which look, if he could unseat Blake Lizotte, but remember what Blake Lizotte did last year. Played 70 games, he had 25 points, he had 10 goals. He was fine. He was a plus 15. I think Raz, when you look at him right now, he's probably an extra forward at this point. So I don't see him emerging as a scoring threat. Could he be an effective bottom six player? I do, but if he's the center, you don't really have a spot for him. You've got Byfield the 3C, which you hope works, and you have Lizotte at the 4C. And I don't think at this point in time in his career that Lizotte's going to give up his spot to Erasmus Kupari. So I'm not really sure where Rast fits in right now. You know, if they do make a trade, maybe he's one of the forwards, the young prospects that they give up. And he's not that young of a prospect anymore. I'm not sure where Erasmus Kupari fits in, because remember, what's your bottom six right now? I follow Byfield, Kaliev, and probably Grundstrom, who, when he went in, played well, Lizotte and Brendan Lemieux. And you need that toughness that Lemieux brings. I don't really see a spot for, and if you're having guys like Lees Anderson and Gabe Vilardi trying to make the team, I don't really have a spot for Raz. So maybe he starts again. Maybe that's a player who's on the cusp. Maybe he's an extra forward. Or maybe he starts the season in Ontario, because, again, he's another player that is waiver exempt, so you wouldn't have to worry about losing him to waivers.
You were talking about maybe moving Kupari. Could you see the Kings moving their first round pick for an impact player at or before the trade deadline this year?
I could see only if it's not a rental. I don't think this organization wants to trade first round picks for rentals, because, to be frank, they're not that close. What this team needs is elite talent. And when you look at Tampa and you look at Colorado and you look at Florida and you look at even the Rangers, the Kings have a really nice team, and they got 99 points, and they have a system that works, and they hopefully can improve, and they got an outside shot at winning the division. But I don't see the player who you would give up on a rental that would put this team over. Like, there's too many good teams in the West, and the Kings are just not there yet. They should be a playoff team. They can't go backwards, right? They can't make the playoffs last season and now miss this season. Like, that would not be a good thing for the organization. So I think they would only give up a first-round pick if they're going to go get that stud defenseman, like the two guys I mentioned, or they want to get another big-time scorer. But it would have to be somebody on terms. So I think that's the only way they would move it, like they did with Kevin Fiala. Remember, they traded the first-round pick this year for Kevin Fiala, and then they signed Kevin Fiala to a seven-year deal. So that's what you want. That's the only way I see them moving their first-round pick. Although, if they do improve, that pick's going to be probably in the 20s. So I wouldn't be afraid to trade it. I don't see the rental coming up down the road that would, A, help them get into the playoffs, and, B, have them make a long run.
With Quick only having 1 year left on his deal, could you see the Kings testing Peterson as the starter and see if he's the guy of the future?
No, that was supposed to happen last year, right? And it didn't happen.
Right.
Look, when you had Cal on your entry-level contract, it's okay. Now Cal's making $5 million a year, and you look at the numbers. 2.9 goals against, .985 save percentage. It's a bad contract right now. Cal has to emerge, because I assume this is Quick's last season. Right. And Johnny was great. Look, he was the playoff goalie. His numbers were better. 2.59 goals against, .910 save percentage. Wasn't stellar. It wasn't Vezina winning trophy, right? But he was the guy in the playoffs. Cal didn't get a sniff. Cal has to emerge. Like, they don't have a choice. Now, granted, when John leaves, they're going to have to go find a veteran goaltender, not at, you know, a $5.8 million cap hit, probably half that, to pair with Cal. But they definitely want Cal to emerge. It doesn't mean that they can't win with Jonathan Quick in that one more season. But Cal, just when he plays, he's got to be better than he was last season. It was a very disappointing. He's probably the most disappointing player on the team last year, because they expected him. They gave him that money, saying, you're the guy. It's time to take the net away from John Quick, and he couldn't do it.
We were talking about Dustin Brown before, about him not being the type of player to go on in a staff role. Could you see maybe a Jonathan Quick doing that, or is he also like that?
No, I think John wants to go home and watch, you know, football games on his couch in Connecticut once he's done here in Los Angeles. I don't see John's another guy that, and certainly he doesn't want to do interviews as assistant coach. So I would be, at this point, I would be surprised if he became like the next Bill Radford or the next Dusty Amu. I don't see that. I don't see that in John's plan, because, again, these guys made a good amount of money, played a long time. I think they're happy to step away from the game and get away from the rink, because they don't like another player like Quick, like Brown. They don't like the limelight. So I don't see I don't see John in a coaching or staff role, maybe as a consultant down the line. But I think once they finish this, and remember, they played a long time with this team. I think they just probably need a year or two to recharge the batteries that they want to get in at that point. Do I think that he's going to go straight from playing to a coaching or a staff role? I don't see it for either Brown or Quick.
And we talked about this team can't go backwards. So they're slowly exiting the rebuild phase. So in your timeline, how long do you see until they're making these all-in moves where they're throwing first picks away, trying to get impact players?
I would say one more season. I think this would be the season because, A, you have to prove this season that you're a playoff team again. And if you do, and let's say you win the division, then that's a nice step. And again, I think it comes back to Byfield. What's Byfield at the end of the season? Is he that, you know, is he that star player that everybody says he should be? Or is he the player who underachieved last season? So I don't see them going all in. And remember, you can't, what's all in? They're at the cap. So I guess you can argue they are all in because they're at the cap. They have no cap space left. So okay, I always draw the parallel. Are they the Rams? Where the Rams just say, screw the picks and we're just trading them all for established players? No, but I think at some point in time to upgrade the talent in the organization, you're going to have to trade picks. You're going to have to trade some of the prospects that they like. Wouldn't trade Brant Clark because hopefully he's, you know, another version of Drew Doughty at some point. But I don't see it this year, Brody. I see it next season because if they have back-to-back playoff appearances, and let's say they go one more round and they get eliminated in, you know, a divisional round, then you can say, okay, we need to add to it again. Where are the holes? They're going to need a goaltender probably because I don't think the people and the players in the system are good enough to be the 1A to Cal Peterson. They're probably going to need more offense from their blue line. So you're going to want to go get a player like, if not, it's not Chychrun, a player that can produce offense. So I think we're one season away from saying, okay, now we're in a position where we can beat the Colorados and the Tampas of the world. I just don't think from a still standpoint, they're there right now.
Talking about Brant Clark, as I said, opening, the World Juniors are on now and Brant Clark isn't on that team. Would that suggest that he's trying to make the team out of camp or he's saving himself for camp? Or how's that situation playing out?
Well, he wasn't it's weird, right? This juniors was weird because the cuts for the team was before the pandemic hit. So this is just a continuation of that. Mm. I think Brant Clark's goal is to make the team. I talked to him at their development camp and he wants to be a king this year. So I think that's what he's focused on. I think at this point, what does the World Juniors do for Brant Clark at this point? I don't think it does anything for him, to be honest with you. So I think his focus should be on making a team. He said it publicly. I'm not sure there's a spot for him. So he may play in juniors. But I don't think he should be that concerned about making the juniors when they play again in December when the schedule goes back to what it once was.
And let's say Clark has a stellar camp and there's no reason to throw him out of the lineup. Who would you say would be the next player out if the Kings were, if Brant Clark had a stellar camp and you just can't send him down?
Well, you wouldn't, it won't be Drew Doughty, obviously. I doubt it's Matt Roy because Matt's their best defensive defenseman. And I doubt it's Sean Darcy. So I don't know where he could make, even though Brant says he wants to make the team and I love his personality. It's a personality that we don't see much here in Los Angeles, who's not outspoken, but is a really great quote. I don't see the spot for him, to be honest with you. I think that's he's probably 1 year away. Unless something happens injury-wise, I don't see him making it because I don't think he's better right now than any of the three guys I named at this point. Plus, you have a kid like Granz who's playing in the World Juniors, who's also a right defenseman. I don't really see it. Now, the path was clear a little bit because they traded Brock Faber in the Kevin Fiala deal. I think Brant's at least one more year. And to be honest with you, with those three guys on the right side, there's no need to rush Brant Clark. I mean, if he's the next, well, I don't want to use the name Caleb McCarr. If he's a top pair or top four defenseman, you can wait one more year for Brant Clark because the guys they have in the lineup right now, I think the only way you would do it is if you would trade a guy like Matt Roy because Matt doesn't really give you much offense. So that would be the type of play that you wouldn't want to trade. But again, I don't see it happening because I think the established players are certainly good enough to make this team a playoff team on the right side.
Do you think Trevor Moore, will stick in the top six for LA?
Yeah, he was their top scorer, I think, after January 1st. There's no reason why he can't because that team, that line had chemistry. They were really good. They were the number one line after January 1st last season. They were, so there's no reason. I know people don't look at him that way, but they need to start looking at him that way because he hustles. He's determined. He's a bulldog, and you saw it in the playoffs too. And he's a really good defensive player as well. So he's a two-way player who's emerged here. You know, players do emerge sometimes. And sometimes when you have a tag on him, it's hard to lose your tag when you're a bottom six player. Well, Trevor Moore like lost that tag. So he's 27 years old. There's no reason why he can't replicate a season. He only missed one game last year. Like he beat out Alex Iafallo for that left wing number two spot. And he deserves to start there next season. Whether he replicates his success, I don't know. But right now, you have to look at him as a top six player who gives you some offense and gives you certainly tenacity and gives you a solid defensive game as well.
The emergence of Trevor Moore kind of just shows how good that Jack Campbell trade was for the Kings a couple of years ago. Like you got Durzi, Grundstrom, Trevor Moore, like you, all those players you got in that deal are roster players for you. Like that's something that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. That's a great trade for Rob Blake. And he's made solid trades. And that's the one thing that going back to the Kings championship years, like Dean Lombardi never drafted great. I think he drafted one 30-goal scorer. It was Tyler Toffoli. But he made incredible trades. That's what he did. He traded for Justin Williams. He traded Wisnowski for Stolen Green. And without those two guys, they never won a championship. He traded for Jeff Carter. He traded for Mike Richards. And that's what Rob's going to have to do because I know people harp on how great the Kings prospects are. I'm sorry, it just doesn't happen like that. You have to trade for other players and from other organizations. Every team did it. Tampa built their third line 2 years ago by making all trades. Like Naz Kadri was a trade for Colorado. Like Eric Johnson back in the day was a trade for Colorado. They don't have the superstar talent. Cause if you want to say, okay, they're on a path to what Colorado is doing. Well, who's Gabe Landeskog and who's Kale McCarr and who's Rantanen and who's McKinnon on the Kings? Like that's their core four. Like the Kings core four or do the core four or well, one's retired now. One's going to be retired after next season. And you have Drew and Anje. So they will have to at some point continue to trade picks and prospects or sign free agents. That's going to supplement this team because the way the team is right now, it's a playoff team. It's not a championship caliber talent team. And if you want to, if you don't agree with me, just pound for pound, compare the rosters from a talent standpoint to those of a Tampa or a Colorado, and you'll see that they don't have the talent. Now, it doesn't mean it can't emerge, but I think at this point, if you look at every team, when you look at what they do, yes, they have their core players, but it's not 12 core players. It's four or five, and you wind up finding players from other organizations either by a trade or by a free agency, and that's how you do it.
I kind of want to shift the focus on the conversation now to reporting. And first question for you here, how has journalism changed since the start of COVID?
How's the world changed since COVID, right? People stuck in their houses and we have to wear a mask. Right. From a reporting standpoint, the one thing that it did, because we didn't have access to the locker rooms, is the one-on-one conversations you had with players, not during the games, not during post-game. It's on the off days, on the practice days. Like I remember when Jim Matheson and Leon Draisaitl had that dust up in a press conference. And Leon said, oh, Jim, you know everything. Well, that wouldn't have happened if we had access to the locker rooms because if there was a beef between Leon and Jim, Leon would have said, hey, I need a couple of minutes, and they would have squared it instead of doing it in a public venue. So the one thing that we're robbed of, and it also robs the fans of the stories because you get the story. You don't get a great story from a player about his background or his family or something right after they finished the game. You get it on the off days, and we didn't have that ability. So they would come out, and you never went one-on-one. The normal reporting was you go into a team's locker room on a practice day, and the guys would be in there changing and getting dressed, and you could go up and say, hey, you got a minute? And that's how – now, I'm fortunate because I know all the players. I had relationships with them, right? But that's what we were robbed of, not just from a media standpoint, but from a fan standpoint, from a storytelling standpoint. We didn't get to know the players, like the new players coming in the league the last 2 years. You don't really know much about them because we didn't have the access. Now, what I assume and what we've been promised as writers that cover the league, I'm a member of the Hockey Writers Association, is that we'll have access next season in the locker rooms, which I think will be great from a storytelling standpoint because these stories need to be told. So I think the one thing that COVID did rob everyone of is the ability for us to tell deeper and better stories about these great players that play in the NHL.
For the Kings, we could see hear a little bit more about Quinton Byfield. That's one guy we haven't, like, you don't hear much about him. Like, he's kind of, he's on that third line. I know there's big hopes for him, but you're talking about that absence of story. Like, we can really hear his story this season kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, when, and that's nobody's fault, but the way the Kings did it was they would bring players out and so you would have the opportunity to talk to Quinton on consecutive days. He would come out maybe every week or 10 days. And then once you had him for that, you were talking about his game, not talking about maybe getting adjusted to life in LA, but you couldn't have in-depth 5 or 10 minute conversations with a player like that, which I assume we'd get next season. So yeah, all the kids, you know, and Arthur Kaliev, who, you know, was playing against guys like that he grew up idolizing, like Alex Ovechkin. Like, you didn't have those conversations or stories, even a guy like Victor Arvidsson, who's been established. Right. I mean, you know, when he came back, if you had the ability to talk to him, and we did to some extent when they played Nashville, but you didn't, it was just in a setting where you couldn't go one-on-one. It was, everybody had to take a turn asking a question. So there was no continuity with respect to talking to a player over a period of time. Even a kid like Trevor Moore, who's emerged here. Yeah. Everybody knows and jokes he's from Thousand Oaks, California. And that's the running joke. And every time he scores a goal, they'd say he's from Thousand Oaks, California, because he's a local kid. But you didn't have the meaningful conversations about what it means to be an effective player in your hometown, or with Kopitar and Doughty. And Drew doesn't talk to the media that much about, you know, them begging to get upgrade the team. And finally, they upgraded the team, and now they're back in the playoffs, so what it meant to them. And, you know, Drew, we were robbed because he got hurt. You know, he played half the season. So, yeah, a lot of the storytelling that we were used to 3 years ago, hopefully will return next season. And it'll be better for media, for the players, and more importantly, the fans.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing this season and reading more of your work. And Dennis, where can people find you? I know you're a big name in LA, but just where can people who maybe don't know about you, where can they find your work and hear?
Well, I don't hide, Brody. Yeah, I don't hide. So here's the thing. So thefourthperiod.com, mostly when I write for them, it's mostly King-centric. So what I'll do is I'll write every 6 or 7 games to assess trends, what's going on with this, to the team and some other tidbits. You can find me on Twitter, Dennis TFP. I am on SiriusXM. We have the Hot Stove Show that will probably come back in October from 11 to 1 Eastern. But I also co-host with Steve Koulias on the Power Play from 3 to 6 Eastern, usually about once a week. You know, we have great guys like Shane O'Brien and Marty Baron and Mike Rupp also hosting. But I usually sit in, usually once every 5 to 7 days, and sit in with Steve. So you can catch me on radio. You can catch me once in a while on NHL Network. And you can catch me on Twitter when we do our video. We do a lot of video content on Twitter for the fourth period. So you can follow me at Dennis TFP, like the fourth period. And that's where you can find a lot of my stuff.
Awesome. Thank you. And thank you for your time today, Dennis.
Oh, happy to talk to Brody again. No problem. Always good being with you and talking some Kings hockey.